everybody. Hey, we did it at the same time. I've been wondering if that would ever happen.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to this week's Grim Scenarios podcast episode. We are almost done with our major tier list project. We have the Bad Moon Rising townsfolk to do today, the experimental townsfolk to probably do over the next two or three episodes, and then maybe a few wrap-up episodes where we put in the characters we missed because they got released after we started doing these, get some guests on to criticize our rankings and give their thoughts. But first, we'll start with the BMRs. But Milk, how are you doing today?
You know what, Emma? I'm doing pretty good. I'm feeling pretty good. Had a nice day. It's still cold, but I got to play some Clock Tower today unexpectedly, and that was really nice.
Mm-hmm. Tell me about it. It's like 60 degrees here. I think I'm going to die from hypothermia.
I mean, we had 6 inches of snow yesterday, but yeah, that sounds really bad.
Yes, I'm commiserating in our very similar situations.
Very similar situations. I get to do a little traveling this weekend. I'm going to travel to somewhere a little bit warmer, which is Atlanta. I'm going to be down there for Decepticon for a couple of days. But actually, I'm just using Decepticon as an excuse to go to the Georgia Aquarium again.
It's a good aquarium. It's right across the street from the Coca-Cola Museum, which is the best soda-based museum in the world.
It is. It's actually a really fun museum. It's also right across the street from the Atlanta Breakfast Club, which has some of the best chicken and waffles I've ever had. So it's a great area of Atlanta to hang out in, and I'm looking forward to it. That's the banter section.
We'll move on to the character section. So once again, just as our overview, we're ranking these on what we think are their strategic interestingness, not their strength, not their fun, how strategically interesting we think they are. We're going to do the BMR townsfolk. We're going to do them in script order. Because our massive full tier list was getting too unwieldy, the one we're showing you on screen is going to be clear of all those. But don't worry, at the end of this project, we'll have one tier list with all the characters.
It's going to be crazy.
So, first up on BMR is the grandmother. The grandmother's ability is you start knowing a good player and their character. If the demon kills them, you die too. So this sort of goes in the washerwoman, librarian category of characters we've looked at so far, in that they start knowing a good player that they're trying to confirm and ideally protect.
I've been thinking about this one for a while, Emma. And I think one of the interesting things about Grandmother is that it does incentivize you, while it does sort of just, you know, get that confirmatory information, it does incentivize you to hide somewhat because of the penalty of your grandchild getting killed and the grandmother dying as well and getting those two kills, which can be problematic for kill counting in BMR. So I think Grandmother has this extra strategic layer that we haven't talked about that much with any of the other characters, where it almost has to do some of the, like, Demon Bane style bluffing to hide itself to some extent. Or at least it's incentivized to do that.
Yeah. I mean, that's certainly an option. The grandmother also, of course, has the option to get themselves killed early to prevent the double kill from going off at night.
I
think on BMR, like, the grandmother has a lot of incentives that aren't necessarily obvious up front, to try to see if the night death will happen without them dying. And what I mean by that is it's very informative if your grandchild dies and you don't.
Yeah.
Because that means something like an assassin or a gossip or godfather happened, which is good, strong information for the good team.
Yeah, and I think that just further kind of pushes the idea of maybe trying to hide the pairing to some extent. Because learning that your grandchild died to something that isn't the demon, I mean, it's super powerful on BMR. Again, in the context of BMR specifically, it understanding where deaths come from is so crucial.
Yeah. On the other hand, the grandmother has none of the needing to figure out their pings stuff that the washerwoman or librarian have going on, trying to use those as sort of a baseline here. Like, the grandmother just learns one player and their character. Like, it's incredibly difficult for evil to bluff that without doing an inter-evil confirmation, which I think isn't done enough.
Agreed. I think another character that we're going to talk about when we get to experimentals, which is the steward, also has some things in common with the grandmother, but it's much less solid confirmation. So its weakness is the like lack of real confirmation.
Yeah. It's very easy for evil to bluff steward. It's much harder if they want to try to get into a chain of confirmation with a good player. It's almost impossible for them to do it to a grandmother. So I think like that's where the power and the strategy of grandmother both trades off. On the one hand, like once the grandmother has their confirmation, there's more they can do with it than say the washerwoman or the librarian, but it's much easier for them to get their confirmation in terms of strategy.
I'm thinking it goes in the B tier, Emma. It's getting solid information, and you know, It does have a lot that it has to think about. There are a lot of vectors, you know, of information.
I was going to argue for it to go in A tier, where we have the librarian and the washerwoman, because I think like the sides balance out. But I could be convinced to go to B.
Yeah, I'm not sure. The single ping does make it a little bit myopic in a sense. It does make it sort of a little bit very singularly directed.
Which makes it
harder to think about it as an A tier.
But it has so much variability in how it plays it once it knows that thing. Do they want to die early, try to get the Professor Resurrection off? Do they want to try to see if their grandchild will die without them? Do they want to try to draw the kill from the demon? Like, these are all sort of like incentives that the grandmother has in terms of play pattern.
I'm game for that. I think you've convinced me actually that it just goes up one more to A.
And when I was looking at the BMR characters before this, I do think there's going to be a lot more of them in the A and S range than we had in the other scripts. There's a lot of characters here who have a lot to think about. So maybe we'll move it down once we've adjusted for its script, some of the other characters on the script.
Sounds good to me.
Next up is, of course, the sailor. The sailor is in some senses the soldier of BMR. That's one way to think about it. But the sailor's ability is a little bit different. It's amped up from being safe from the demon to it's you can't die. But, well, I should read the entire ability text. The entire ability text is each night choose a player, either you or they are drunk until dusk, you can't die. That's how the ability text is written, but it's frequently best to think about the sailor as you can't die, each night choose an alive player, either you or they are drunk until dusk. The you can't die is the ability, the drunkenness is the drawback to the ability.
Yeah, I think sometimes people get a little bit confused about it, but one of the things that sailor has to think about in addition to soldier is what does it mean when they do or don't die? Because you can publicly test the sailor's ability functioning or not, which means to a greater or lesser extent, again, not perfectly, obviously, because that wouldn't be very much fun, you can determine whether the sailor poisoned themselves or someone else.
Yeah. I think the sailor, like, from a strategy point, it's a very hard townsfolk for a lot of people to wrap their heads around because it wants to do two things that lots of townsfolk sort of feel gauche about doing. One is, as the sailor, you want to be executed during the day. Being executed during the day gives your town, you and your town, information. It's generally in your advantage for you to be executed during the day. Like, if you live, great. That's a day you didn't execute a good player. If you die, that gives you information. And that gets in. But this can be very hard for people. Townsfolk normally don't want to be executed. They want to live because they want to execute evil people. And the sort of second part to that sort of gauche thing is the Sailor explicitly depends on being able to meta storytellers reliably. And meta-ing storytellers is something that some people either think is gauche or they don't like, or some storytellers will say they don't want to be meta-ed. I would strongly, if you're interested in the storytelling perspective, try to put out that idea from your head. Being meta-ed about what sort of decisions you'll make is generally fine. And the Sailor only works in particular if the storyteller is willing to pretty reliably land on the meta of the Sailor drunks townsfolk and gets drunk on outsiders and evil players with some, like...
Asterisk.
Like, you can't, like, let a Sailor, like, pick the grandmother every night, do drunk the grandmother, because then you've turned off both the Sailor and... You're using the Sailor's downside to turn off the grandmother's downside. That's not particularly balanced.
Yeah.
But... generally speaking, the Sailor should be drunking themselves when they pick evil players and outsiders, and getting and drunking townsfolk when they pick them.
Another way to think of it might also be that the Sailor should possibly also drunk themselves if their drunkenness causes no effect on the target, and the target is a townsfolk. So a grandmother that's already gotten information, things like that.
Yeah, like, or a spent professor.
Spent courtier.
Yeah, like, the way I think you want to think of it from a player and storyteller perspective is you should treat you cannot die like it's the most powerful townsfolk ability in the game. And therefore, it's always in town's advantage for that to be sober. And it's only not sober
when
it would be unfair for evil to for it not to be sober.
Yeah, exactly.
So
this means a lot for the strategy of the character. It means that there's a lot that the character has to think about, the player who draws the character, rather, has to think about, especially in terms of not only who they choose to pick, but when they choose to test themselves. Because the other part of Sailor, which makes it challenging to use this information, is that you can't just kill the Sailor every night. Yeah. You can't just execute the Sailor every day, rather.
You have to stop executing the Sailor pretty quickly.
Yeah, you don't have time to just execute the Sailor over and over again.
Yeah, so... what do we do with all this? What do we do with all this?
This is a hard one. This is genuinely a hard one, because... the strategy of the character requires them to do things that players wouldn't normally choose to do, or some players might find distasteful to do. Also, some people don't like that the Sailor drunks other players, right? That doesn't feel townsfolky to an extent.
Mm-hmm.
And so all of this wraps up into a package that kind of says the Sailor probably has to be played in a very different way than most of the other characters that we've already talked about in terms of the townsfolk, and maybe different than most of the other characters we're going to talk about on this script as well, and possibly the experimentals. Finding an analog for the Sailor, like, it is the soldier of BMR, but finding an analog for the Sailor is pretty hard. Most of the characters that you could think of as Sailor analogs are red tokens in a lot of ways. And so I think because you have to play this so differently, and the strategy is so almost anathema. Like it's the opposite of what Clock Tower players are usually thinking about. It makes me want to say that it's a highly strategic character.
Yeah. I think it's highly, I agree with that. Like the sailor, you're definitely needing to think about quite a bit in what you're doing. Where that lands for you, I think, is a tough question, but it certainly plays very differently than everything else.
I think I'm inclined to put it in A tier, but I also think that this like brief discussion about the sailor has made me think that we need to do an episode on sailor.
Yeah. We'll do a more sailor-focused episode. I don't know if we've done a specific sailor one.
I don't think we've ever touched sailor particularly, so I think that would be a really interesting one for us to tackle.
Yeah,
I'll drop it in A tier for now. These BMR ones aren't as straightforward for sure.
Yeah, and I think part of this is that it'll be in the sort of back end where we sort of get to the BMR characters that are a little bit less strategic, mm-hmm. but. Next up is the sort of the chambermaid. Each night, choose two alive players, parentheses, not yourself. You learn how many woke tonight due to their ability. That not yourself there is just to prevent the chambermaid from getting a direct read on one player, because the chambermaid always knows that the chambermaid woke up. The chambermaid has a lot on its shoulders. It's basically the only information role in BMR, in the traditional sense, the chambermaid and grandmother, but grandmother's a you-start-knowing, one-off role that has a highly mechanical component, which is, you normally think of townsfolk as either mechanical or information. The chambermaid is the only information character. It's the only one that's not doesn't have a mechanical effect on the game. It's just learning things. The storyteller is giving it information. And it's extremely strong information. It's one of the characters... Most BMR characters, I think, are very hard to put on customs, but Chambermaid is one of the sneaky characters that you put it on customs and you're like, holy shit, Chambermaid breaks shit.
Yeah. I have a bad personal relationship with Chambermaid in games and as a storyteller, so...
Once again, if this was a power ranking straight up to S tier, it's so strong. It's doing so much. It's scaring the evil. It's limiting the evil team's bluffs. It's providing powerful information about who can possibly be the demon. It's doing all this stuff. But Milk, what do you think about its strategy?
I mean, get claims, pick people. Learn number, repeat, try to avoid the goon. Like, I mean, there's something to, like, picking people that you think maybe you don't... I mean, there's some thought that goes into it, certainly. It's in the same place for me, to some extent, as Fortune Teller, where I felt like... I still feel like Fortune Teller... There's a lot that can go into it, but it often just ends up being pick two players, see what I get. Pick two players, see what I get. I think there's a top end with it that's very, very strategic, but I think on average, I don't think it's that strategic.
I would agree with that. I think, well, I'm sure we're going to get some criticisms for the same reason we got criticisms for throwing Fortune Teller in B tier. I think it's where it goes. It's powerful information. You're just sort of grabbing your information, collating it against people's claims. There's not much else you're doing with Chambermaid.
I think you're right. I think we're going to put it in B tier, and we'll have to have a conversation about Fortune Teller and Chambermaid.
All right. Next up, the Exorcist. The Exorcist's ability is each night choose a player, parentheses, different to last night, The demon, if chosen, learns you are, then doesn't wake tonight.
I mean, it seems super powerful. Let's say that first off. Like, in a vacuum, like, just stopping the demon from acting is incredibly strong. However.
Mm-hmm. Oh, you have a however.
I do have a however. On BMR, it's hard to know if it worked some of the time. Mm-hmm. I mean, otherwise the script wouldn't function. Exorcist is so powerful because it makes the demon not do stuff. And in the case of something like a Pukka that's charged on a previous night, like it can really break the evil team's rhythm. But you don't know that you did it a lot of times. And that's tricky.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I think the Exorcist is looking for nights where no one dies as their sort of evidence that they've done something. But of course, there's other reasons for no deaths on BMR, because of course there is. Nothing's ever going to be that easy for you. Just one other note about its strategy. I think something people don't necessarily think they can do, but they can do. Because you can pick dead players as the Exorcist, and occasionally you might want to.
I think that's probably where some of the depth of Exorcist comes from, is being a really good Zomboul hunter.
Because if you attack a Zomboul as the Exorcist and there's no death in a night the Zomboul should kill, that's pretty strong for you.
Yeah. So I think there's a layer of strategy there with picking dead players specifically. There is some strategy to, like, getting social reads and trying to pick a player, but, I mean, kind of a lot of roles have to do that. So I think this one also kind of goes into B tier for me, even though, again, it is an exceptionally powerful character.
I would agree with that. I think B tier is where the Exorcist goes. It's doing quite a lot, but I think B tier is a sensible place to load it in. Generally, you just want to kill the people you picked after Knights of No Death and worry about other explanations for that later.
Yeah. Don't get fooled by the, there were innkeeper picks, and there's an innkeeper. Nah, just, if there's no deaths, just clear that world.
Yeah. Talking about the innkeeper, that's our next character. The innkeeper's ability is, each night choose two players. They can't die tonight, but one is drunk until dusk. Much like the sailor, the drunkenness is there as a drawback to hurt the good team. So the more townsfolk you pick, The more important townsfolk is the one that's more likely to get drunk by the innkeeper.
Mm-hmm.
So if you pick a townsfolk and an outsider, you're probably drunking the townsfolk. If you pick the grandmother and the exorcist, you're probably drunking the exorcist. If you pick the unspent professor and the tea lady, you're probably drunking the professor. If you pick the Poe and the fool, you're probably drunking the fool. The innkeeper's interesting. In the same way that the sailor's fairly interesting. But, so the innkeeper sort of, the innkeeper comes to the fork in the road of, there's two really powerful things the innkeeper can do. Right? Powerful thing one is pick two good players, the demon tries to kill those good, one or both of those good players, and you get to laugh in the demon's face.
Yep.
The other thing...
Thing two!
Path two is the innkeeper can pick the devil's advocate and the demon. The devil's advocate gets drunk, and the demon, who thinks they're DA protected, gets executed the next day to prove their that they're good to the tea lady next to them, and oops, the game's over.
Aggro... Aggro Innkeeper is my favorite game mode. Genuinely
which
my
way,
favorite game mode.
Which way? These are two paths. They're both very strong. You can pick either one of them. They're both fun when they work, and they both rarely work.
Yep. The ideal ideal structure and power level for this character.
Is two real fun, completely different paths. Aggressive Innkeeper that's trying to hunt the evils down and force the storyteller to drunken evil. Protection Innkeeper that's trying to protect people. On BMR, you're almost never going to hit your two evils, and you're almost never going to get your protections off. Just the way of the script.
Oh, when it happens. Oh.
So, rarely does anything. Most times, the most significant impact of the Innkeeper is the drunkenness drawback, which you can use sort of informationally. Hey, why did I seem to drunk the player bluffing chambermaid, the player claiming chambermaid, instead of the player claiming minstrel? That, there might be something weird there, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, I think you can use it as an information gatherer in that way, too. You know, thinking about what information, in the long run, you know, over a couple of days, thinking about what information you drunked and why that, whether that works in the context of what you picked. Trying to pick players that the drunkenness might not matter. Trying to pick a grandmother, for example, and a fool or something. You know, where the drawback isn't that bad. You might try doing that too. Ultimately, Innkeeper is also a role that is extremely powerful, or it seems extremely powerful, and is often a priority target for the evil team. Which means you're also playing the can I hide long enough to be effective game, which is also interesting.
Yeah, you're also in the weird situation where, you know, you are the Pukka if you're a claimant Innkeeper, so keep that in mind. some people will try to kill you for being the Pukka if you're claiming Innkeeper, because Pukka loves bluffing Innkeeper.
I genuinely heard that sentence at first and had to rethink of it as you also have the unique problem that you are the Pukka if you're the Innkeeper, so...
Yeah, like, it's always, like, you know, sometimes the Innkeeper is real. Sometimes, like, 1 out of 10 times it's actually the Innkeeper, but 9 of the 10 times, the Innkeeper is really the Pukka. So you do have to play around that a bit as the Innkeeper. The fact that you look at your token, you realize it's actually the Pukka token.
That's right.
You're on the evil team, and you only thought you were the Innkeeper because you were bluffing it.
That's
that
right.
Said, for all my mockery of the Innkeeper's relatively weak power level and frequentness of Pukka bluffs, I think it is our first S-tier BMR character.
It is such an S-tier character.
It's got a lot of choices.
It has so much choice. And like you said, it's such a low success rate. But, oh, when you find the right world and either drunk those two evils or protect two goods, it's just so good.
Plus, we already put the Innkeeper in S tier when we were ranking the demons, because we put Pukka there. And given that, the office meme with Pam, corporate asking you to pick between the two pictures, you show me the Pukka token and the Innkeeper token, I'm not going to see a difference. I'm going to tell you it's the same picture.
I'm with you on this one, for sure.
All right. We'll bring up, of course, next, the Gambler. The Gambler is the character whose ability is each night choose a player and guess their character. If you guess wrong, you die.
I feel like
I talked a lot about Innkeeper, so why don't you take the lead here?
Yeah, I'm glad to. This is a character the next two characters, actually, Gambler and Gossip, are both characters that you and I have spent a lot of time talking about when they end up on custom scripts, because they, off of BMR, they are both game-breakingly powerful roles.
Mm-hmm.
The Gambler is a push-your-luck role that requires you to get social reads and hard claims off of people. And evil players should be willing to claim their good role to gamblers to get the Gambler killed, at least minions should, because, to be honest, you need that Gambler dead. Gambler is very strong confirmation, and anywhere that doesn't have a massive amount of either misinformation, specifically poisoning, or alternately extra kills, the Gambler is not going to fit. The Gambler is all about the things that we've talked about that make really strategically interesting characters. There's an incredibly high risk. You have a push your luck aspect to your role, and when you get information, it's actionable.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And talk about the sort of information you get. I want to tell a brief funny story, not about a BMR gambling, but I was playing a custom script with Gambler on it, where the demon was Leviathan, and this was a text game. But I was the Baron. And night two, the Gambler gambled my demon as the Leviathan. and that gets to, if you really want to take the risk with the Gambler, you can eliminate whether someone is a demon candidate if you think you've locked down on the correct demon type, because you can gamble them as the demon.
Yeah.
Normally, you're going to be one to be trying to confirm good players as the role they're claiming and then kill people when you die. Much like Exorcist generally wants to kill whoever they picked on a night of no deaths, the Gambler generally wants to kill whoever they gambled on the night they die.
There's a few exceptions. Also, if you're solo death, there's some things. But yeah, go ahead.
Yeah, but if a demon knows they're being gambled, demons frequently attack the Gambler, even if they suspect they're being gambled and aren't there for sure, because they don't want the Gambler being in a multi-death. So even if you're a solo death, you wanna just kill the person you gambled. I had a game once where I was the Gambler. I gambled the demon. I died. They died because they were the Zombul. I did not let them get away with it. But I think, also that game where my Leviathan was gambled, we won. There was a heretic in play. It was great.
Yeah, I mean, I'm happy to put Gambler in S tier, to be honest. It fits all of the sort of requirements that we've set for it before, and I think it just goes right up there.
Yeah. Also, the Gambler can kill themselves on purpose to sort of confirm the validity of all their information.
In case there is a lot of droisoning on a script, you can kill yourself
Even on BMR, you get two or three gambles off, then you gamble yourself wrong correctly on a night where there shouldn't be the extra death from you.
Yeah.
It's pretty strong. You've confirmed two or three players. That's better than a virgin does for a death.
That's very strong. I like that.
Next up, the Gossip. The Gossip's ability is each day you may make a public statement. Tonight, if it was true, a player dies. I know you have a lot of thoughts on the Gossip.
I've come around on Gossip over the years. I play Gossip a little bit differently than other players. I try to use it. I think a lot of players, when they first see Gossip, they try to use it to get broad strokes of where the demon is. And I think that's fine. But I think sometimes the puzzle of BMR comes down to little pieces of information and knowing whether they're true or false. And so on BMR specifically, what I will typically do is Gossip the statement I believe to be false, based on the game state or based on the previous, kills on previous nights or based on what people are claiming, and try not to create additional kills. Creating additional kills generally favors the evil team. It accelerates the game. But a Gossip that tries to not create additional kills can get confirmatory information through lack of kills. It's not as strong as getting the kill, and you have to be more precise about how you word your gossips. You can't get as broad of information. You can't take 50-50 swings on the Grim doing that. If you take a 50-50 swing on the Grim, the chance is, you're 50-50 to hit the demon or not. So I don't know that that approach is great for everyone, but what I think it signals about the gossip is that it has a lot of strategic depth, because I think there are so many ways that you can play it, and it is another one of those sort of craft your own information roles, like we've talked about with Artist.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I agree with Milk that a lot of time you want to try to prove negatives by gossiping something you think is false. It can be useful after doing that a little while, or it can be useful to start with something that's you think is true anyway, to sort of confirm yourself and then start getting into the falses. So that, much like how the gambler can trade their life off to validate their confirmations, the gossip can trade someone else's life off to validate their information. But yeah, this is a craft your own strategy. There's lots of things you can do it. You can use yourself as sort of a... You're basically a multi-shot artist at the cost of people's lives. We put the artist in S tier. I don't see how we can put the gossip anywhere else but S tier.
It goes into S tier, and I'm with you on needing to make sure that you do sometimes gossip things that are true. You should mix it up. And again, I think that speaks to the strategy of the character. I think constantly gossiping things that you think is true is probably going to be detrimental to your team.
Mm-hmm.
So you don't want to do that all the time. But when you have the bodies to spare... Go for it. Yeah, S tier for sure for gossip. It's not even a question.
All right, next up is Courtier. Courtier is once per game at night, choose a character. They are drunk for 3 nights and 3 days. This is a press your luck character. It's more powerful the later in the game you use it. We've traditionally ranked press your luck characters highly. Milk, what do you want to say about the Courtier?
I think this is one where I'm starting to struggle to think that the press your luck concept as a whole makes a character strategically interesting. I think it's a contributing factor. But
the Courtier has 8 choices, Milk. 8 choices! Isn't choice the same as strategy?
Is choice the same as strategy? What 8 choices does the Courtier have? The Courtier has some problems mechanically with it being a press your luck character, because games of BMR might go rather quickly depending on what demon is in play, and so a Courtier drunking a character for 3 days, if you do that on day 3, you may not see the end of that ability it may not be that effective. So courtiers aren't incentivized to press their luck past about day 2. And most of the time, I think you find courtiers going on day 1. So that takes away for me some of that press your luck value, and it's built into the mechanism of the character.
Yeah, I have never seen a courtier who held it past day 2 who everyone didn't think was evil, and I'm not sure I've ever seen one who wasn't actually evil.
Yeah.
Like, yeah. Courtiers who are holding it to day 3, day 4, are frequently evil players trying to decide what world they want to sell. Part of the problem with Courtiers is on certain, like, player count. Like, drunking the DA is, on night 1, is so strong for the Courtiers, because then you've, like, guaranteed any protections that go off day 1 are pacifist, sailor, or tea lady, and you're eliminated the DA's confirmation mimicry. And that's incredibly strong, and like on most 2 or 3 minion games, the strength of that ability, like especially given the higher likelihood a particular minion is in play than a particular demon is in play, is like so worth it. Like, that your only other, like, the other option you sort of have with the Courtier is a quick Godfather hit, so the Godfather doesn't learn which outsiders are in play, because that can be particularly devastating to the evil team.
I mean, something, yeah, those are both great choices, right?
The Godfather, like, you lose out on if you miss. Like, if there's no Godfather play, you pick Godfather night 1, you just did nothing. Whereas,
and you don't know.
Even if there's no DA in play, picking DA night 1, still validates anyone who survives execution that day, which and... is so strong. Like, it's such a dominant strategy for Courtier to go DA that it's almost hard to find reasons not to do it once you're not on 2 and 3 minion games. On 1 minion games, it's a little difficulter because the power of hitting a demon is stronger on 1 minion games because there's less players and drunkening gives you so many more executions relative to player count. But on 2 and 3 minion games, choosing DA is generally so much stronger than all other options, it's really tricky to not consider Courtier as a character that is a dominant strategy.
Yeah, and you mentioned, like, oh, there's eight options for the Courtier to choose from. But there's not 8 options, because the options, first of all, aren't similar in type, and second of all, as you've mentioned, they aren't similar in value. The fact is, you're never going to Courtier drunk the mastermind. It's so it's unpredictable. It's very hard to find a situation where that makes any sense. The situation where that makes sense is, like, Evil tries to go for that day one, day two mastermind play, which...
And then you drunk them that night. It's also not satisfying to do that.
It's not interesting. Yeah.
Like, the demon gets executed day one, the mastermind day triggers, you drunk the mastermind night two, and the game ends at night.
It's not interesting. There's already enough kills on... there's already enough deaths on the script that you're probably not going to drunk the assassin. You might at low player count. You might at low player counts. You might do that.
Seen it done on night as like a night two play for Courtier. It's like,
yeah, it's not bad.
Not terrible, but
nope.
It's not cool.
You're not going to drunk the Zombul probably on night one.
Yeah.
You know, like, so you're really your choices are DA Godfather. Maybe if you're going
to
go...
wait and see if you can try to figure out what type of demon it is.
Yeah, maybe if you're going to go night two, try to go Poe, Pukka, Shabaloth, and see what you hit. It's just so much more powerful to drunk the DA and know that all protections on day one, two, three are good characters.
Just, especially in 2 and 3 minion games again. Like,
yeah.
Especially in 3 minion games where you have a 75% chance the minion's in play and it makes any execution survival validated, it's really hard for me to argue to see a reason why on a 3 minion game you don't pick DA as the Courtier Knight 1, except for you're choosing to have more fun, which is valid, but...
Yeah, but strategically...
It's a character with a strategically dominant strategy. So despite its theoretical pressure luck elements and your theoretical 8 different choices, I think it really does fall down in C tier.
Yeah.
I'm talking about characters that have a dominant strategy. our next townsfolk is the Professor. Once per game, at night, asterisk, choose a dead player. If they are a townsfolk, they are resurrected. The Professor wants a townsfolk to be executed and die day one so they can resurrect them night two before the Shabaloth can get a resurrection. So there's no question about the confirmation being Shab instead of Professor. It's one of the most goated plays in Clock Tower. The Professor's weakness is, of course, that the pacifist exists.
Yes.
And the storyteller can deny you your opportunity to do the obvious thing.
Genuinely
playing for the obvious thing.
Genuinely my favorite, I think, interaction on maybe on the base 3 scripts is the interplay between Professor and Pacifist and how they both want the same thing. They want to kill a powerful townsfolk. So
they execute a powerful townsfolk. Right. Day one,
powerful
but townsfolk really
day
mad
one.
At each other about what happens.
And that's right. And then it happens and they're both like, "No!"
The Professor's like, "How could you, Pacifist? How could you?" Fool.
the natural enemies.
They're natural enemies. Like, part of what Pacifist is doing on the script, and I don't want to make Pacifist outsider jokes, because it's not. It's a powerful townsfolk role.
It is.
But part of what Pacifist is doing on BMR is just nerfing the Professor. It's just making the Professor's single most powerful thing in the game. Like, There is no... I don't think there's any evil abilities. I don't think there's any other good abilities that do something as powerful as the Professor resurrecting someone night two.
Yep. It's better than a virgin.
The difference between Professor and a virgin is at the end of the Professor cycle, both confirmed players are alive, whereas in the virgin cycle, one of them is dead.
That's right.
Like, just strictly better. I guess the strategic downside to the Professor is sometimes generally a pacifist, occasionally a sailor or tea lady, very annoyingly sometimes a DA, will get in the way of you doing your single incredibly powerful thing. And then you can do it night three, and people might accuse you of being a Shabmoth.
Yep.
Oh, well. You know what you've still done if people think you might be the Shabmoth? You've still resurrected someone who can never be the demon and who you know is a townsfolk. Whoop-de-doo. Yep. They might execute you as a Shab.
Boo-hoo.
This character goes in D-tier.
It's a D-tier character. Not even worth the conversation.
The courtier has an illusion of choice. The Professor doesn't even have that illusion. They have something they need to do.
The courtier can pick between two things, okay? They can pick between the DA and the Godfather. That's the two things they can pick between.
And 75%. They can wait one or two nights and try to hit the demon.
Yeah, okay, so they've got like a 60% strategy, a 20% strategy, and then like two 10% strategies. The Professor has one strategy. Oh, Professor.
Next up is the Minstrel. The Minstrel's ability is when a minion dies by execution, all other players except travelers are drunk until dusk tomorrow. The except travelers is to prevent the Minstrel from being confirmed by having, say, the matron suddenly not work, or the judge not work, or the voodoo not work. All things that are very awkward for the evil team to deal with. The Minstrel occupies an interesting space. I got into Clock Tower through being a fan of competitive card games and a few competitive card game players who started playing Clock Tower on Twitch that I watched. In competitive card games, things like Magic the Gathering or Hearthstone are probably still the Pokemon trading card game. So those are probably the three most prominent. There's some cards you put in your deck that, because they look like they have a powerful effect, but they don't really end up affecting your win rate very much, because if you're losing when you play the card, they don't do anything for you. They don't stop you from continuing to lose. But if you're winning when you play the card, yeah, they keep you on your winning track, but you were already winning. It's not a big deal.
The old win more.
It's a win more card. It's a card that looks strong, but all it's really doing is making you win games you're already winning by even more. That's sort of the space, design space the Minstrel occupies. With one exception. There's one exception where the Minstrel, I think, actually is doing something. Most of the time, like, you've found an evil player. Executing the evil player puts the good team ahead. And then the Minstrel puts them a little bit more ahead by taking away the demon's kill that night.
Yeah, I have nothing additional to say about this character. You could rewrite this token as your existence ruins the game for both teams, and I wouldn't mind.
You're passive. Like, yes, you want to encourage executions as the Minstrel, but so do half the other BMR characters. That's nothing particularly special about you. I guess the one situation where the Minstrel is doing something unique is if there's a situation where the Minstrel is trying to decide between two evil players which one they should execute, and executing the wrong one won't cause an immediate game loss, So not three players alive, unless one of them's the Zomboul.
I guess.
Well, even one of them's the Zomboul. The Minstrel makes it so you can execute either evil player and win, because if the demon would still need to kill someone at night to get the evil in con, the Minstrel can... You execute the minion, the demon's drunk, then you execute the demon. If you, it's the other way around, you execute the demon dies. That's the one time where the Minstrel isn't just winning more, it's changing a potential loss situation into a win situation. But again, like, this character is just... It's not doing any. It's not doing anything strategically.
It's, I mean, the player's not doing anything. The player's not doing anything. They're just hanging out.
It's one of five or six BMR characters that want executions all the time. And it's the one that gains the least from the execution because it's just building on the benefit that... It either does nothing or it builds on the benefit that good already gets from executing an evil player.
You know, I beat up on the Minstrel a lot in trying to understand, like, what it is that can make it an interesting character. I don't draw it often because it doesn't often go into bags, and when I do get the chance to draw it, I do try things with it, but it doesn't. There's not a lot you can try is the problem, because most of what you're trying is social play that you would be doing with a number of other characters anyway. I'm always surprised by the number of people who tell me that they love this character. And that's not to denigrate their love of the character. It's just that I genuinely, as a person, do not understand.
Talking about a protection role that does have things it can think about and things it can choose, let's talk about the Tea Lady, Milk.
Oh, yeah. My favorite bluff.
The Tea Lady's ability is, if both your live namers are good, they cannot die.
It's great. It's so simple.
Mm-hmm.
So this gets into talking about... this gets back into what we were talking about with the sailor and talking about how to use a role where not dying or dying provides information.
Mm-hmm.
The Tea Lady needs to be... like an empath, needs to be engaged with their neighbors to get social reads, get claims, try to figure things out. But ultimately, like an empath, is likely to end up pushing on their neighbors.
Yeah. The Tea Lady sort of, much like the innkeeper, though, in a less dramatic way, has two paths it can choose from, right? Path one, try to get a neighbor executed to see if they live. Path two, be quiet and wait to see if one of your neighbors dies in the night. Because if one of your neighbors dies in the night, your other neighbor probably has a little bit of red in their token. Right? But the demon's probably not going to kill your neighbor, your good neighbor, if they know you're the Tea Lady and they're sat on your other side, right? So if you want to try to do that, if you want to try to trap a demon that way, you sort of can't be loud about being the Tea Lady, you can't be pushing on your neighbors. So quiet Tea Lady and loud Tea Lady, I think, are the two choices you have to think about when you're playing the Tea Lady. And I think both have strengths and weaknesses.
Yeah, and I think they both have interesting play patterns as well. Although you're not making choices in terms of like knight abilities or anything like that. You're just trying to leverage your pass ability in the best possible way, or the way that you think is most useful, or you know. And that might, the thing about Tea Lady I think that makes it most interesting is that might change over the course of a game, because a neighbor might die, but you might think that they're good, and maybe they were killed by an assassin, or maybe you were drunked by a sailor or an innkeeper, and then you have to a different set of neighbors that you're kind of interacting with. And it's potentially okay to shift between the quiet and loud Tea Lady, you know, throughout the course of the game.
Yeah. You know, we've had a few passive abilities that we've looked at so far, primarily the mayor and the soldier. We ranked them very differently. And I guess the minstrel, but you know, meh. We put the soldier in C tier. It's best not to discuss the minstrel. and the mayor in A tier. I think the tea lady fits snugly between them in B tier.
I agree. I think it's doing some of the similar things that make the mayor strategically interesting, but I think it's more limited in how it can do some of those things.
Yeah. All right. Only two BMR townsfolk left. The next one is the pacifist. The pacifist's ability is executed good players might not die.
I love the pacifist. I'm gonna say it is not an outsider in any way. Emma and I have discussed pacifist strategy on the podcast in the past.
Mm-hmm.
I think we're both big fans of it and how it impacts the game in BMR. And I think we both have rather aggressive approaches to playing pacifist as well.
Yeah, I think the pacifist is quite similar to the Undertaker or the Cannibal, where you don't really care who gets executed day one. You just don't want it to be you, and you want to make sure it happens.
Yep.
And you want to sort of, again, you sort of, you don't get to choose who the storyteller is going to save. But you should generally think that if you're in the game, that most of the time, the first player who survives execution is probably a good player who's not the goon.
Mm-hmm.
There's a few exceptions to that. Like, you're probably not saving the tea lady's good neighbor when their other neighbor is the assassin.
You're probably not you're probably not saving a drunk sailor.
Yeah. But yeah,
your ability's not going to be spent on a fool that gets killed. Like, there are a few niche scenarios where.
Yeah. Generally, the issue with pacifism, which is again a character I like, is generally you just want executions to happen, and then you want to think about the results of those executions. And if the player dies, they're more than likely than not, especially if no one's been saved yet, if the player dies, they're more likely than not evil. That's exciting. But they're also, you've done your like, yeah. It's sort of like the minstrel in that sense. I think it's a little more interesting than the minstrel because, like, you do have to discern the difference between you and DA. But as much as I love the pacifist, and I think it's not an outsider, I don't think it's particularly deep.
I don't think it's particularly strategically deep. It's somewhere in the same realm. It's somewhere in the same realm as Tea Lady. Maybe, you know, a little lower even. Yeah.
I think it goes in C with Soldier, another character I like, but I don't think it's particularly strategically deep.
I think the difference between pacifist and Tea Lady is that Tea Lady is very directed, whereas pacifist, mm-hmm. you're really reliant on the storytellers, you know, metaing the storyteller and the storyteller's sort of.
Which again, the storyteller perfectly fine. Should let you do.
Yeah, and it's perfectly fine, but you're a little bit more reliant on that, and so the strategy comes down a little bit because you're not as able to focus on the meaning of your information, I think. So I'm going to pop pacifist into C there.
Right. Last but not least is the fool. The first time you die, you don't. And of course, the fool has the most strategic choice it has to make in any character in all of Clock Tower, which is, of course, after you see the fool token, you have to decide whether you're just going to speak in quotes from the fool from King Lear or not.
That is a challenge. Where do you stand on that?
It's a fun as an occasional thing, but you don't want to do it every time.
You will run out of quotes.
Yeah.
Or at least funny ones.
The fool's interesting.
Should we talk about fool? It's hard to talk about fool in a vacuum, I think, to some extent. But shall we talk about fool as it relates to another character that people think is similar, which is Sailor?
Yeah, I think the big difference between the Sailor and the Fool is the Sailor wants to be executed to test their ability, The fool wants to know if they've been tapped at night, so they don't want to be executed, generally. Especially early.
I think a way of thinking about this, and it's something you and I have talked about a little bit, is we both are sort of anti-putting Sailor on leech scripts. And the reason is that there's a very unfortunate thing that could happen where the Sailor just wants to die, and if they don't die, they're never the leech host. And if they were leech hosted, then they might try to get themselves killed. And the fool is probably never going to try to get themselves killed early in the game. And so if you think about that kind of dichotomy of what the sailor's trying to do, the sailor is happy to test themselves because they can survive more than once. The fool's not happy to test themselves because they can only survive that one extra time, and testing themselves ruins their ability. Mm-hmm. I'm not sure if I've structured that in a way that makes sense, but it's a way of thinking of it, at least outside of the constraints of just sailor and fool in a vacuum. I don't know.
Yeah, no, I think that makes a lot of sense. Like, the fool, despite its superficial similarity to the sailor, the fool is much more interested in being a nighttime protection that learns something by virtue of dying in the night. Yeah. Whereas the sailor wants to be executed at day to test its information and publicly confirm itself. Like, the fool can't... The sailor has the benefit of, if it is drunk and powerful townsfolk, the sailor should be able to survive multiple executions.
Yeah.
The fool can't. If the fool is executed once, then it's double tapped to make sure it wasn't a DA protection. You don't gain anything from that as the fool. You just die the second time.
Yep. And look like an evil, probably.
You're really the demon's mane of BMR, and that you're trying to draw the kill at night.
Mm-hmm.
To frustrate the evil team and force them to kill you again. And then when you die the second time, you can now backtrack that there's a kill you haven't accounted for yet.
Now, that does mean that you have some of the same strategic choices as another demon's, as any of the other demon's banes, which is just try to look good, like just claim fool and try to you know, be as not suspicious as possible, you know, or try to hide and have your ability activate in the night. The difference from between fool and Ravenkeeper or sage or banshee, which are, you know, related demon's banes, is that fool isn't necessarily going to know that their ability triggered, whereas all of the others are going to get some sort of feedback.
Yeah.
Even farmer, right, is going to have somebody to chase down and figure out who turned into a farmer.
Yeah.
And so fool doesn't have that feedback, which in my mind makes it a little bit harder to have strategic choice with it.
Fool gets that feedback from when they die at night, right? If they die at night, they know that they've been tapped once before, probably.
Fair, or an that's assassin right. Assassin, Pukka.
I'd love to argue to put the fool in B tier, but I think it has to go with the soldier, because it's doing very similar stuff.
Yep, it's doing soldier stuff. C tier it is. Well, hey, we got through those surprisingly readily.
Yeah. Looking at this, we ended up with 3 S tiers, the same as we've had in S and B. Those were Innkeeper, Gambler, and Gossip. Only we ended up with 2 B tiers, just the grandmother, A tiers, the grandmother and the sailor. That's down from 5 TBs and 5 S and Bs. We did toss in 3 B tiers, which was the same number as TB, more than we had in S and B. But we topped in 3 C tiers and 2 D tiers. So this is a little bit of a different breakout than we've had in the other scripts, which I think makes sense, because BMR is a very different sort of script. Milk, are you comfortable with where everything is ranked?
I'm comfortable with where everything is ranked. The one thing that has occurred to me is the S-tier minion, the S-tier BMR townsfolk are all townsfolk that probably don't fit well on scripts outside of BMR, or are at least hard to fit. There's things that we've talked about. Whereas I think the S-tier characters from TB and SNV, and I don't have the compiled list like you do, I think they were more broadly useful.
I think that's true. Those were Monk, Ravenkeeper, Snake Charmer, Philosopher, and Artist. I think Ravenkeeper, Snake Charmer, and Artist are very versatile. Artist maybe is the one that you probably need a sufficient amount of misinformation, to be fair. Monk and Philo are pretty versatile, but have some bad interactions.
Yeah. And so it's just kind of interesting to think that these three, Innkeeper, Gambler, and Gossip, are so unique to the sort of structure of BMR, and it's the structure of BMR that allows them to exist at all.
Mm-hmm. But to be fair, I would also say that Grandmother and Sailor have trouble existing off BMR. Those are our A-tier characters, much more so than our A-tier TB and SMV townsfolk. Chambermaid, Exorcist, and Tea-Lady all have trouble existing off BMR. Other than maybe Clockmaker, I think, much harder than our B-tier townsfolk from the other scripts. Courtier, Pacifist, and Fool, very difficult to take off BMR, much harder than Undertaker, Soldier, Flower Girl, or Sage are from their respective scripts. And Minstrel and Professor simply cannot exist off of BMR.
So maybe it's just BMR. I mean, maybe it's just the nature of BMR that it's just like this, you know?
Yeah, I think it's just the nature of BMR. These characters are all incredibly difficult to take off of BMR.
But I think when we have talked about BMR in the past, I've always sort of thought, oh, well, it's just these particular characters. But I think, like, the more, I think having them broken out like this, it's not just the powerful characters on BMR. It's not just the strategically interesting characters with lots of choices. It's genuinely just all the characters on BMR.
Mm-hmm.
So that's an interesting thing that I've found out by doing this.
Yeah, BMR. The beautiful monster.
Yep.
The Island of Misfit Toys is what I've called it.
I like that. Yeah, that seems right.
The House of Cards.
Well, we're getting some sort of house in the next expansions, maybe, so we'll have to see about that.
Anyway, I do hope you've enjoyed our look through at BMR Townsfolk. We'll be back soon with probably looking at how many Townsfolk are left. 2 episodes on Experimental Townsfolk.
That's it for us, everybody. May your scenarios stay grim.
Grim.